bounded backward, leapt high up on the wall, and hung with one hand from a narrow ledge, his boots planted on the stone. He'd assumed his master would do the same, but he hadn't. Instead, his master stood in the center of a crowd of the creatures, spinning, whirling, slashing, killing. Dees diverted his fire from the wounded queen to the lilacs attacking the emperor, but the frenetic motion of the combat prevented him from aiming accurately, and his shots bounced off their carapaces in all directions. The queen recovered enough to survey the scene, and her eye fell on Vader, perched as he was on the wall, seemingly vulnerable, and she lurched toward him, shrieking. She pushed through the lilacs around her, her tentacles squirming wildly, grasping for him. The remaining eye fixed on him, and her mouth opened wide in a prolonged hiss. Below, an explosion of force lightning shredded a handful of lilacs and left his master standing in the center of a circle of charred, dead creatures. He made eye contact with Vader, nodding, and Vader knew to hold his position as the queen closed. His master raised both hands and sent a storm of force lightning into the queen, enmeshing her in sizzling blue lines. She screamed and spasmed in agony, her mandibles parting wide to reveal the rows of her teeth as the lightning tore at her carapace and the organs underneath, burning her inside and out. Vader acted quickly. Drawing on the force, he leapt off the wall straight at her head. Despite her pain, she managed to snatch him out of midair with a tentacle, seizing him around the waist and squeezing. His armor creaked under the strain, and he shouted with pain, but as ever, let the pain draw him deeper into the force. She lifted him high and jerked him toward her slashed face, the ruin of her eye, her mouth opened wide to hiss, exactly as he'd anticipated. "Finish her!" his master shouted. He threw his lightsaber at her open mouth, guiding it with the force, causing it to spin as rapidly as a rotor as it flew into her gullet. She gagged, recoiled, one good eye wide with pain and confusion, as Vader maintained his mental hold on his spinning blade, cutting her apart from the inside out. Desperately, instinctively, she drove the spiked, poisoned tip of another tentacle at his chest. Enmeshed in the force, he caught the spike in his gauntleted fist and stopped it before it reached his armor. He grunted with pain. With exertion, the thick, muscular appendage of the giant creature straining against his force-fueled strength. He was the stronger, and stared into her face as his lightsaber tore through her innards and his master's lightning charred her flesh. She screamed again in a final burst of agony, and the hulking remains of her body collapsed to the floor, taking Vader, clutched now in a limp tentacle, with her. He hit the floor in a crouch along with the bulk of her carcass, shook off the tentacle, and recalled his lightsaber to his hand. The blade cut through her carcass and returned to his hand, slick with fluid. The remaining lilacs shrieked and chittered, tentacles and legs jerking wildly. Dees continued to blast at them. Vader met the eyes of his master standing 5 meters away, and both nodded. Immersed in the force, they set about slaughtering the remaining lilacs. The lines of their lightsabers rose and fell, and the confused, stunned beasts barely defended themselves. Soon the floor was carpeted in carcasses, and Vader and his master were the only living things standing amid the carnage. His master's cackle filled the silence. Both deactivated their blades.
"Well done, my friend,"
the Emperor said. Back up in the tunnel, Dees used the high tensile cable integrated into his belt to rappel down the wall. He picked his way through the slaughter, obviously trying and failing to control the expression of awe on his face, until he stood before Vader and the Emperor. He took a knee, his fist to his chest.
"My Emperor."
"The Captain?"
Vader asked. killed by one of the creatures, Lord Vader, Dee said as he stood. His body is not recoverable. To Vader, the Emperor's mind seemed to be elsewhere. He may have heard Dee's or not. Vader could not tell.
I think we should leave this place before it starts to stink,
the Emperor said finally.
This is the way to the surface. I'm quite sure.
Together, Vader, the Emperor, and Dees moved quickly through the tunnels, ever upward, back toward the surface. They stayed alert for Lilacs, but the tunnels were empty. The entire nest must have been annihilated.
The creature struggled when the queen died. When the head is removed, the body must soon die,
the Emperor commented. Vader said nothing, merely looked at his master.
Do you not see? That's why we're hunted, Lord Vader. The rebels hope to cut the head from the Empire.
Of course.
It was unlike his master to state something so obvious, except with a purpose.
And?
His master adorned his face with his usual half-smile.
Many things are that way, even some relationships. If the head is removed, the body cannot exist alone. The relationship is complementary, almost symbiotic.
Vader understood his point then.
Yes, master.
The roll of thunder reverberating through the stone told them they were nearing the surface. The tunnel they traversed gradually narrowed until they could move only single file. Dees led, and Vader came last. Ahead, Vader saw that the tunnel was blocked. He could hear the sound of dripping water and falling rain from behind the blockage. Dees climbed amid the rubble, trying to peer through it.
We're right at the end, he said. I can see the outside through a crack in this rockfall. Probably a rock slide caused by the rain. We'll need to clear it, my lords.
Vader and the Emperor stepped around Dees, faced the tons of rock and dirt, and both felt deeply into the force. As one, they raised their hands, summoned their collective power, and loosed a sudden blast that was more powerful than a grenade. Rock and dirt exploded outward, no doubt traveling high into the night sky. Beyond, they could see the trunks of trees and falling rain.
It's clear, Sergeant,
said the Emperor with a smile. Concerned that the lilac carcasses would eventually attract scavengers, maybe Gutkurs again, Gaul led Isfahl and Cham a few kilometers away from the ravine and into the forest. Thunder rumbled, lightning veined the sky. The rain eventually worked its way through the canopy and turned the forest floor sodden. The air smelled of loam.
The weather is going to make scanning for Vader from the ships even more difficult,
Isfahl said. Cham only nodded, preoccupied with endgames and exits. He didn't see one, and he very much wanted to.
What's on your mind?
Isfahl asked. Cham forced a false smile. Tomorrow. Now it was Isfahl's turn to nod and say nothing. Cham had called a halt here, figuring there was little point in wandering aimlessly through the forest. They'd lost the Emperor's trail. It would have to be found by air or not at all. Meanwhile, they'd wait. Isfahl, of course, tried to pace away her impatience. Gaul's team sat on logs and tended their gear.
We should keep moving,
Isfahl said, pausing in front of Cham.
To where?
Cham asked her. She grunted and continued pacing. Cham allowed himself to consider the possibility that Vader and the Emperor were dead, devoured by the lilacs deep underground. He doubted it, but the uncertainty gnawed at him. He was running out of time to bring events to a close. Eventually,
the Equatorial Communications Hub would get a dish back up and override Callan's jamming signal. At that point, a coordinated search and rescue would begin in earnest. He'd have no room to maneuver then. Two, he figured that word of the destruction of the Perilous had reached Coruscant, and that at that very moment, Imperial ships and soldiers were being prepped to come to Ryloth, if they weren't already en route. Once they arrived, they'd try to blockade the whole system. And then, they'd scour it for Cham's people. Exits. End games. He had hours at best, if he wanted to give his people a chance to get clear. He felt the day and events slipping out of his grasp, and he was tired, damn tired. His comm link with Callan and Phelan pinged. "Go," he said into it. Isfahl stopped pacing and stared at him, as tense as a drawn bowstring.
"Cham,"
Callan's voice called over the comm.
"I just had an explosion on scan."
Cham's heartbeat accelerated. His leku flicked with excitement.
"You're sure? How far?"
5 clicks from your location. Precise coordinates incoming."
"What is it?"
Isfahl asked, having heard only Cham's half of the conversation.
"What is it?"
Cham held up a finger for her to be patient.
"Callan, just note the location. Do not approach on your own. Acknowledge?"
"Not even a little peek?"
"Callan, if that's Vader, he took 2 ships down while he was on the ground, and he survived the attack of a Lilac horde. Do not approach. We have to play this just right. Acknowledge."
"Acknowledged. You want a ride?"
"We can cover 5 clicks on foot faster than if you come back here to pick us up. Just set down and stay on comm. Phelan, get in the vicinity, but not too close."
"Got it,"
Phelan said. Cham cut the communication and explained to Isfahl what he'd heard from Callan.
"Could be something unrelated," he cautioned, seeing her flush with excitement.
She nodded, her fidgeting stilled by the prospect of action.
"But it might be them. It probably is. And we've got nothing else. Gaul, get your people up. We're moving."
Gaul and his troops readied their gear and formed up.
"Belkor?"
Isfahl asked Cham.
"Right,"
he said to Isfahl, and raised Belkor in the encrypted comm.
"Put yourself down. We have something we're checking out. Just be ready if I call."
"Wait, Syndulla, I..."
Cham cut the connection and imagined Belkor shouting at him from the cockpit. But Belkor was unstable, and Cham didn't trust him not to foul things. The Imperial might make a run at Vader and the Emperor before Cham was ready, or he might compromise their position early. Cham just needed Belkor in reserve with his V-wings, ready for a call. At this point, Cham regarded Belkor as a hammer. He decided he wouldn't get the Imperial involved until he had a nail he wanted struck.
"Let's go," he said to Gaul and Isfahl. "Quickly now."
Vader, the Emperor, and Deez walked out of the tunnel and into the forest. Thunder boomed and a hard rain fell, causing the leaves above them to rustle.
"Which direction, my lords?"
Deez asked. Before either of them could answer, a green-skinned Twi'lek girl, perhaps in late adolescence, emerged from the underbrush. She wore a weathered rain parka and had a long-barreled Clone Wars-era blaster pistol on her hip. Field gear stuck out of her backpack. The end of a carved wooden tube, almost like a musical instrument, stuck out of the pack too. Seeing Vader and the Emperor and Deez, her big eyes widened, and her leku twitched, but to her credit, she didn't run. Deez started to level his rifle, but Vader grabbed the guard's arm, halting him. That seemed to put the girl a bit less on edge, though she looked ready to bolt if she needed to. Vader sensed more curiosity in the girl than fear.
"Who are you?" Deez asked.
"Who are you?" the girl responded, her accent so thick that Vader found it hard to understand her at first.
What are you doing out here? Are you lost?
The girl apparently did not recognize the Emperor or his companions. She must have been from one of the remote settlements that were known to dot Ryloth's wilderness.
Come here, girl,
the Emperor said, putting the power of the Force into his command. Unable to resist, the girl walked out of the tree line until she stood small and vulnerable before him. With preternatural speed, the Emperor drew, ignited, and slashed at the girl with his lightsaber. But Vader had sensed his master's intent and moved with greater speed, igniting his own blade and intercepting his master's blow before it could land. The girl, under the sway of the Emperor's power, seemed scarcely to notice the danger. She simply stood there, staring vacantly, her face aglow in the red light of the crossed blades. The Emperor's mouth twisted in a snarl, and Vader felt his power gathering. Behind Vader, Deez raised his rifle and aimed it at Vader's back. But Vader stretched his free hand back and unleashed a blast of power that lifted the guardsman from his feet and flung him into the trees. Branches cracked audibly under the impact of Deez's body. Vader and his master stared at each other across the sizzling glow of their crossed blades.
Has it come to this?
His master said. He sounded calm, almost resigned, but not at all surprised. The tone surprised Vader.
Forgive me, Master.
He deactivated his blade.
I think the girl can be of use to us.
Do you?
The Emperor asked softly.
There must be a village nearby. If they have a ship.
Deez climbed to his feet and staggered out of the brush, groaning. He leveled his blaster rifle uncertainly at Vader, looking to the Emperor for a directive. His master's scowl lingered for a moment before twisting into a half-smile that didn't reach his eyes. He gestured at Deez to stand down, his eyes never leaving Vader's faceplate.
I agree. She can be of use to us.
The Emperor looked at his blade, at Vader, pursed his lips, and deactivated the weapon. To the girl he said,
Is your village nearby?
The Twi'lek, still under the influence of the Emperor's power and with an unblinking faraway look in her eye, nodded.
It's not far. I was out checking hunting traps and heard a boom. I thought it was a rock slide and came to look. I saw you from the trees.
And what did you think when you saw us?
The Emperor asked. The girl's brow creased as if she didn't understand.
Think? I assumed you were lost, that maybe you'd crashed. Strangers are uncommon out here. You'll be welcomed at the village, though. It's custom.
His master smiled.
That's nice to hear. How many of you are there?
37.
The girl said.
But Naria's with child, so it will soon be 38.
Indeed,
said the Emperor. He looked at Vader curiously.
Master?
Vader asked, but the Emperor ignored him.
Maybe you have some news of what's happening in the cities?
The girl asked.
Maybe we do,
the Emperor said.
Do you have a ship in your village?
The girl shook her head.
No, no ship. Not even a working communicator. We lost it last year and haven't been able to get another in trade. But we have food and warmth and songs.
The Emperor smiled.
Very good. Take us to your village.
Without another word, the girl turned and led them through the forest. Vader figured the girl's village must have been founded by slaves who'd escaped from one of Ryloth's mines, or by refugees displaced long ago during the Clone Wars. Many such villages existed on Ryloth, and many of those had little or no contact with the outside world. The Empire knew of the settlements, of course, sometimes disbanding them and relocating the people to labor camps if slave labor was needed somewhere, but generally the Empire left them alone. The girls' village had no ship and no communicator, though, so it would be of little use to Vader and his master, except as a way stop. Still, there might be something there they could use. "What's your name, girl?" the Emperor asked her as they picked their way through the trees.
"Drua,"
the girl said. She looked at Deez.
"What's your name? And why do you wear that suit?"
Dee seemed momentarily taken aback by the question before saying,
"My name is Sergeant, and it's my honor to wear this armor."
The Emperor diverted the conversation.
"So you're out here on your own, Drua?" "Of course. I know the forest as well as any."
She looked up through a hole in the forest's canopy.
"The rain is going to end within the hour."
"Where are your parents?"
the Emperor asked, and Vader thought it an odd question to come from his master. The girl did not turn back to face them, and her voice fell a bit when she said,
"My mother died 2 winters back. I didn't know my father."
"Not unlike you, apprentice,"
the Emperor said quietly. The words dredged Vader's memory. He flashed for a moment on his mother, a slave. Flashed, too, on the Tusken raiders who'd killed her. On the satisfying moments when he killed them. All of them. Every one of them.
"You live alone, then?"
the Emperor asked.
"Of course not. I live with my grandfather,"
Drua said.
"Well," said the Emperor, "we will try not to be too much of an imposition."
Cham checked their location against the coordinates on his comp. "Getting close," he said to Gaul and Isfahl, who walked on either side of him. Gaul signaled to his people, who had sorted themselves into their usual skirmish line formation, to fall back some and move in silence.
"Let me check the area first,"
Gaul said to Cham, and Cham nodded. Gaul disappeared ahead into the trees and rain. Cham marveled at Gaul's woodcraft as he and Isfahl stood there under Ryloth's trees, waiting in the rain, saying nothing. Finally, Cham decided to repair the damage he'd caused earlier.
"I'm sorry about what I said before."
"About what?"
she asked, not looking at him.
"You know what? About the movement. About being tired. About the fight going on without me."
She looked at him then, her skin wet and flushed.
So,
we keep on after today, no matter what happens. We can rebuild the movement."
Her eyes narrowed and she studied his face.
"You're a bad liar, Syndulla. You meant what you said."
He held up his hands in protest.
"No," she said. "Hear me.
I thought about what you said.
If we kill Vader and the
when..." he corrected her.
"When we kill Vader."
She blinked.
"Right. When we kill Vader and the Emperor. The Empire won't just fall down overnight. But we'll have started something. A rebellion, maybe. But the rebellion will need leaders. You."
He wasn't sure what she wanted to hear, so he said nothing.
"I'm not making myself clear," she said. "You were right, at least in part. I see that. The movement is done after today. But that's not because it's going to die. It's because it's going to change. And it's going to spread. What we did today, what we do today, is going to ripple through the whole empire. And whatever grows out of those ripples will need leaders. You, Cham..."
"And you," Cham said.
She shook her head, her leku waving.
"I'm a fighter, not a leader, not a planner. That's you. And that's why I don't want to hear any more talk about letting someone else carry the fight. After today, we fight on different ground.
and we maybe aren't the Free Ryloth movement, but we still fight.
Cham had always fought for Ryloth, and only for Ryloth, but he found Isfau's thinking contagious. Maybe a bigger picture was what he needed to consider. Earlier he thought he'd lost his purpose, but maybe in losing it, he'd found another one, a bigger one. Maybe.
I hear your words, Isfau.
Then heed them, she said.
At that moment, Gaul returned from the woods. Isfau didn't wait for him to speak.
What'd you find? She asked.
An old lilac tunnel leading down. Looks like it had been blocked by a rock slide, and then cleared by an explosive.
A grenade, Cham said.
Yeah, Gaul said. Cleared so someone could get through from underneath.
Had to be them,
Isfau said, grinning fiercely. Gaul smiled too.
I agree. Unless lots of people are wandering around in lilac nests. I found the trail leading away from the tunnel. There's more than one left in their group, but the rain makes it hard to distinguish numbers. Gonna make it hard to stay on their trail too, so we should get moving.
It occurred to Cham all of a sudden that they were as close as they'd been all day to their quarry. Half an hour, maybe an hour behind finally getting another shot at the Emperor and his right hand. He looked at Isfau, at Gaul, back at Gaul's team.
I know what you're thinking, Isfau said.
Good, because I don't,
Gaul said, looking from Isfau to Cham and back again.
You look like you've swallowed a rock, Cham.
We can do this,
Isfau said, putting a hand on his forearm.
Think through an exit is all we need to do, right?
Right,
Cham agreed. And then he said the words that he always said to Belcour. Words that felt uncomfortably like a rationalization.
We've come too far to stop now. Let's go finish this.
The wind carried a soft, irritating buzz from somewhere ahead. To Vader it sounded vaguely insectoid. The buzzing rose and fell with the velocity of the wind. The sound seemed to put Deez on alarm. He held his rifle at the ready, looking hard at the trees around them, as if anticipating an attack. Drua looked puzzled, then amused by his reaction.
There's nothing to fear. Those are lilac tubes. The sound keeps them away, irritates their brains. My grandfather says it gives them a headache, so they don't come around.
A sound keeps lilacs away,
the Emperor said.
How very interesting.
Oh, it wouldn't keep one of them away if it was determined,
Drua said.
Grandpa says it just steers them in another direction. Why walk into a headache, right?
The ground rose as Drua led them through the trees. Large boulders and rock piles dotted the landscape here and there, getting more frequent as they went. The buzzing sound grew louder and they soon saw the cause. Curved wooden tubes about as long as a human man's arm hung from the trees, swaying in the wind. Poles of various sizes and at various places had been bored into them. When the wind blew through the holes, the tubes emitted the irritating buzz. Looking at them all hanging there, Vader was reminded of gallows.
Puts one's teeth on edge,
the Emperor said.
What if the wind dies down, Drua?
Won't lilacs come then?
Drua looked at him as if he were ridiculous.
There's always wind. And if we have to, we can run. We have a fortified place we can hide.
I see,
the Emperor said. Soon the forest gave way to jagged hills of piled earth and rock. They picked their way through those until the ground fell away before them, and they found themselves looking down on an enormous steep-walled rock quarry. Two large tunnels opened near the base of the quarry on the side opposite them, dark holes, like the planet opening its mouth in a scream. Vader assumed them to be old mine shafts, and probably one of them was the fortified place Drua had mentioned. Drua's village clustered near one of the tunnels.
30 to 40 single-story structures made of stacked stone and tree limb beams, with roofs of stretched hide and bark. Raised gardens covered a sizable area of the quarry's bottom near the village. Vader saw no livestock. Torches burned along the walls of the quarry in two places, the flames dancing in the rain, marking a serpentine path along the steep walls. Torches burned at the bottom of the quarry, too, at the edges of the village. Vader could see Twi'lek moving about among the buildings. From a distance, they looked like shadows or ghosts. As he watched, a fire sprang to life in a common area, and half a dozen Twi'leks gathered around it, ordinary people doing ordinary things. Music carried up from the quarry, the sounds of a woodwind, and then a lilting, haunting female voice.
"That's Mala, singing the dirge of Veilant," Drua said.
"A dirge," the Emperor said.
"How very quaint.
Drua, does the village have computers? Any vehicles at all?"
Drua smiled and shook her head.
"No, nothing like that. We live simply."
She patted the blaster at her hip.
"We make exception for some things, of course. But the elders say that too much technology makes us slaves all over again. We have our ways, and they serve us well."
She led them along the lip of the quarry until they reached the torchlit path that snaked down to the bottom.
"Mind your steps," she said. "The way is treacherous."
The Emperor chuckled softly at that. They picked their way down the side of the quarry, Vader and the Emperor as sure-footed as Drua, Dees nearly slipping from time to time. At the bottom, a Twi'lek man, muscular, green-skinned, and armed with a blaster pistol, met them. A carved wooden whistle hung from a lanyard around his neck. He looked with mild suspicion on Vader, the Emperor, and Dees.
"Narmam, it's all right," Drua said. "I found these lost souls in the forest. This is Sergeant, and..."
She trailed off, perhaps realizing for the first time that she'd never gotten the names of the other two. The Emperor said,
"My name is Kretan, and this," he gestured at Vader, "is Irluk."
Narm's eyes narrowed, but he bowed, his leku shifting slightly, and said,
"Kreta and Irluk and Sergeant, you are here, and because you are here, you are welcome. That is most gracious of you,"
the Emperor said. Narm and Drua led them along the quarry's floor toward the warmth and light of the village. Narm put the whistle to his lips as they walked and blew a series of notes that Vader assumed indicated the arrival of strangers. The dirge of Veilant trailed off.
"I'm going to run ahead and gather Grandfather," Drua said,
and after a nod from Narm, she sprinted off.
"Gather everyone," the Emperor called after her. "I look forward to meeting them."
Meanwhile, more and more Twi'leks emerged from the buildings and congregated at the village's edge. More shadows, more ghosts, all of them apparently waiting to greet the strangers, Kreta and Irluk, and Sergeant. Other than the Emperor, only Vader knew the false names were ancient Sith words that meant death and fate. Gaul moved 10 meters ahead of Cham and Isval, who walked 10 meters ahead of Gaul's people. All of them were tense, and all but Gaul had their weapons drawn and ready. Isval reminded herself that Gaul was too good to allow them to simply stumble upon Vader and the Emperor, reminded herself too that Vader and the Emperor did not know they were being hunted. Gaul picked his way through the forest ahead of them, studying leaves and branches, but mostly the ground, grunting and nodding to himself, moving them confidently through the woods.
"There's four of them, but not the same four," he said softly, returning to them for a brief update. "They lost one of the royal guards, and there's an adolescent with them now, or a small-boned female, possibly Twi'lek, but there's no way to know for sure."
"How far ahead are they?"
Isfal asked. Not far, Gaul said. I can scout ahead alone if Cham cut him off.
No. We stick together. We just stay staggered. When you see them, we stop to evaluate the situation and plan the attack. We'll get one chance only, and we have to do it exactly right. We all know what Vader can do. We need surprise if we can get it.
Isfal nodded, Gaul nodded, and they set off. Gaul taking position well out in front.
Some people hunt lilacs,
Cham whispered to Isfal. Did you know that?
I've heard that, yes. What are you getting at?
Why do you suppose they do that?
Cham asked.
Risk their lives that way.
The thrill, maybe, she said. Or to prove they can.
Maybe they think it's important somehow,
Cham said. And Isfal realized he wasn't talking about lilacs. And neither was she.
They must, she said. Otherwise, it would be foolish.
Chapter 17. Smiles and looks of wonder greeted Vader, the Emperor, and Deez as Narm led them into the village proper. The modest homes recalled to Vader the kind of home he'd had on Tatooine long ago. The Emperor smiled and nodded, returning greetings and thanking the Twi'leks for their hospitality. Vader said nothing, though he was aware that both his suit and Deez's armor were the subject of many whispered questions and pointed fingers. The Twi'leks crowded around them, interested in the strangers. Deez interposed himself as best he could between the Emperor and the villagers.
Keep some distance, he said to the Twi'leks a bit harshly.
It's fine, Sergeant,
the Emperor said.
It doesn't matter. Does it, Irluk?
Vader answered with a question of his own, speaking in an old Sith tongue so only the Emperor would understand him.
You plan to kill them, Master?
I plan no such thing, apprentice.
The Emperor returned in the same language, never losing his smile.
But they will die anyway. You killed them all the moment you spared that girl.
I don't understand.
You will. Patience, my friend.
Drua emerged from the small crowd and stood before them, her smile bright in the light of the torches. A frail, wrinkled, tan-skinned Twi'lek accompanied her, one hand on the girl's shoulder. His milky white eyes announced his blindness.
My grandfather,
Drua announced. Her grandfather bowed his head in the same fashion Narm had. Probably his Leku were signing a greeting that Vader could not discern.
Our custom is to welcome all strangers,
the grandfather said in a thin, broken voice.
But my granddaughter has shared your names, and so you are strangers no longer. Welcome, Sergeant Kretar and Irluk. The village is here, and they have seen you.
Head nods around, waving Leku, smiles. Grandfather raised his hands for quiet and continued.
The rain has stopped, and we have new friends. It is late, but it is not so late. We should celebrate and have music.
Cheers and whoops answered his words. Music started from somewhere ahead, the woodwinds they'd heard earlier, accompanied by a drum. Many of the villagers started to sing or hum and rill, their native tongue, the rising and falling melody like pouring rain and booming thunder. Drua took the Emperor by the hand and led him toward the village center. The villagers patted Vader and Deez on the shoulders as they followed, uttering words of welcome. Vader allowed himself to be led, looking into the colorful, smiling faces, knowing that he was looking at ghosts. The large fire was already burning in the village center. Two Twi'leks playing carved woodwinds stood near it, swaying to the music they made. a drummer sat between them, keeping time. Carved stumps were arranged in a circle around the fire. Vader and Deez and the Emperor were seated on them. The rest of the villagers milled around, talking and smiling. One couple even danced. Others sat on the stumps and chatted with one another. Drua's grandfather sat near Vader and the Emperor. Before Drua sat, the Emperor said to her,
"Drua, perhaps you could bring Irluk, the broken communications unit you spoke of. He has skill in that regard."
Vader looked a question at his master.
"Indulge me," the Emperor said to him. "Drua, can you get it?"
"Of course," Drua said and sped off. She returned quickly, bringing Vader a small, decades-old communicator and a box of hand tools, the kind of equipment Vader had used as a boy when he'd made things of metal, rather than being encased in it. He opened the box and took a tool in hand, finding that it felt as right as the hilt of his lightsaber. He quickly disassembled the communicator and set to work fixing it. He saw the problem right away. He'd have it operational quickly. Drua watched in wide-eyed wonder. His master leaned over and said,
"I see you've retained the skills of your youth."
"But nothing else from that time."
"We will see," the Emperor replied.
The wind carried a faint but irritating buzzing sound from somewhere ahead.
"What is that?"
Isval asked Cham. Cham shrugged, brow furrowed.
"Let's see what Gol says."
He signaled a halt to Gol's team, who trailed Isval and Cham. They didn't have long to wait before Gol returned from his position, scouting ahead.
"What's that sound?"
Cham asked. "A signaling device, I think, or art or something," Gol said. "Or maybe it keeps animals away. I'm not sure, but it seems harmless. And it doesn't matter because we've found them. Vader and the Emperor. We found them." Isval's heart beat against her ribs. She felt herself flush, felt the calm of action settle on her. Cham took Gol by the shoulders.
"Where, man?"
"There's a gorge half a click that way." He nodded to indicate the direction. "Looks like an old quarry. I saw them in it."
"Saw them?"
Isval said, unable to contain herself.
"Why are we waiting? Let's go. Cham, call in Belkor's V-wings. We can..."
"No, no," Gol said, shaking his huge head, and the seriousness of his expression deflated Isval. "Don't call in anything yet. Least of all Belkor."
"What is it?"
Cham said warily. "There's a village there, Cham. Isolated settlement. All rustics. All Twi'leks. I didn't see so much as a comm array.
What did Vader do to them?"
Isval snapped. "Nothing," Gol said.
"Nothing," Isval repeated. "What do you mean, nothing?"
"Let me finish a sentence, Isval," Gol said, and Isval clamped her mouth shut. "They're all gathered in the village center. It's like a celebration or something."
Isval understood. Gol had said they were rustics. The villagers don't know who they are. To them, they're just guests.
The harshness of life on Ryloth had established certain norms in Twi'lek settlements. Among them, hospitality to strangers. That didn't extend to Imperial forces, of course, but some settlements had been isolated for so long, they knew almost nothing of the Empire. It appeared Vader and the Emperor had stumbled into one of those, and the Twi'leks there had taken them in.
"Show us," Cham said.
Syndulla had told him to set down because he had found something, but Belkor didn't answer to Syndulla. He needed to keep looking, not just for Vader and the Emperor, but for Mors. He wouldn't fly out of calm distance from Cham,
but he'd darn well keep looking.
Up, down, up, down,
he said to Ophim's corpse, which was already beginning to stink. He thinks I'm a fishing lure. I'm not, Ophim. I'm not.
He realized he was sweating, maybe feverish, and talking to a corpse. The sound of the rain beating down on the bubble for the last half hour had given him a headache, and his thoughts flowed like mud.
Just get through the next few hours, right? Right, Ophim?
Belcor flew the recon bubble at the height of the forest canopy, moving slowly, the elaborate scanners on the ship poring over the landscape below and the sky all around. Nothing, nothing, and nothing. He checked his clock, seeing how much time he had before the comm hub got a dish operational and overrode the jamming signal. Time was running out. His head would not stop hurting. And they had found nothing. Well, not nothing. Cham had found something, but Cham hadn't told him what it was.
He doesn't trust me, Belcor said to Ophim.
He tried to raise Cham on the encrypted comm, but Cham wasn't acknowledging.
Belcor slammed the comm against the palm of his hand and shouted, "Pick up! Pick up! Pick up!"
In frustration, he threw the comm against the inside of the cockpit's bubble. It bounced off the clear plastic and slammed to the deck. He immediately regretted his action, fearing he'd broken his only connection to Cham. He cursed and giggled and cursed more. He realized he was having some kind of fit, an attack of anxiety or stress or something. His heart was racing, and it felt like someone was driving nails into his skull. He took some breaths, tried to gather himself, managed to at least get himself under some kind of control. And when he did, he decided that he'd had enough orders from Cham.
The Twi'lek was too slow to act, too methodical, and he wasn't keeping Belcor informed. He said he had a lead on Vader and the Emperor. Good enough. Belcor would see what that lead was. He already had the recon bubble running dark. From the outside, in the night and rain, it would be invisible to the naked eye. Still hugging the treetops, he sent his location, speed, and direction to his V-wings so they could keep pace with him and stay in contact. Then he set off in the direction he knew Cham to be.
Let's go see what he's found, Ophim.
Moores operated the scan in the transport. The officer flying it stayed close to the top of the trees, but not too close. The transport was not an agile craft. If they caught a thick limb... A ship showed at the outside range of Moores' scanner, bringing her to full attention. She activated the comm and hailed Steen.
You seeing that, Steen?
Moores looked in the direction of Steen's transport, even though the dark and rain prevented her from seeing it except on scan. Steen's voice carried over the comm.
It's a V-wing, ma'am. No doubt one of Belcor's. And here it comes.
Moving fast, said the officer flying the transport.
Moores really should have tried to memorize his name.
Hail him, Moores said, trying to keep her voice calm.
Neither Moores' shuttle nor Steen's transport was capable of winning a fight against even a single V-wing. They had to talk their way out of this, or their attempt to rescue Lord Vader and the Emperor was about to end in fire.
You do it, Steen. Belcor's men may not respond to me.
To the pilot, Moores said, Do not go evasive.
You're sure, ma'am?
Yes.
Moores said, though she clenched a fist as the V-Wing closed, its weapons locked onto Moores' shuttle. Alarms started to wail.
He has weapons locked, the pilot said unnecessarily.
This is Major Steen Borkus of the Equatorial Communications Hub,
Steen said over the comm, his voice calm and commanding.
Power down those weapons and identify yourself immediately, V-Wing.
The V-Wings in Atmo lights came into view, closing fast. The agile fighter flew straight toward the shuttle and transport.
I say again,
Power down and identify yourself, V-Wing.
The weapons lock stayed hot, so Moors played the card she held. She could not imagine Belcore had told the V-Wing pilots the whole truth.
V-Wing, Moore said, are you assisting with search operations for Lord Vader and the Emperor? That's our purpose here. Acknowledge.
The V-Wing buzzed over and past the shuttle and transport. The telltale hum of its engines, audible even through the shuttle's bulkhead. Moore's let herself exhale.
Say again, transport,
the V-Wing pilot said. Moore's decided to dive in altogether.
Son, this is Moff Delian Moores, and I asked if you were assisting in the search for Lord Vader and the Emperor, both of whom are on the ground somewhere near here. And they are on the ground because their Star Destroyer and then their shuttle were destroyed as a direct result of action by Imperial traitors. Specifically, Colonel Belcore Dre. Do you hear me?
Quiet over the comm.
Son, I hope you understand me. And I hope you realize that this is all going to come out eventually. Belcore didn't tell you about Vader and the Emperor?
A long silence. Then,
no, ma'am.
Son, there will be an investigation like we've never seen. The Imperial Security Bureau, Stormtrooper garrisons, all of it. Listen, I don't know all of what Belcore told you, but you should believe none of it. And unless you're also a traitor, power down your weapons now and communicate with no one other than us. Acknowledge.
The next moments turned a few more of Moore's hairs gray. But finally, the V-Wing released its weapons lock.
Acknowledged. Ma'am, this is Wing Leader Aram Minsa. And Belcore told us you were the traitor. And I guess I was willing to believe that. Maybe a bit too willing, as I owe Belcore. But I know Major Borkus's reputation, and there's no way he's involved in treachery against the Emperor. What's going on here, ma'am?
A slow-motion assassination attempt, Moore said. But we're going to stop it. Tell me what you know, who's out here, where Belcore is. Everything.
The V-Wing pulled into formation beside the transport and the shuttle.
Yes, ma'am,
said the pilot. Soon Moores and Steen knew that Belcore was in a recon bubble and had a total of 6 V-Wings flying a comm ladder as they looked both for Moores and for Vader and Palpatine's crashed shuttle. She learned, too, that Belcore had told the pilots that they would probably end up having to attack a ground target based only on coordinates, and that when he gave the order to attack, they needed to move fast and ask no questions. Finally, she learned that Belcore had abruptly changed the search area a short time earlier. From that, Moores drew the obvious conclusion. Belcore has assets on the ground, she told Steen over the comm. More traitors, or maybe a rebel group. But either way, they have a lead on the Emperor and Lord Vader.
Could be,
Steen said, though he sounded skeptical.
We need to get to Belcore,
Moore said, and knew the recon bubble scanners would pick up their approach long before they picked up Belcore on their own scans. Belcore could easily evade them. Besides, they didn't know exactly where he was. All they had were his last known coordinates, and they knew that he was still within comm range of Minsa's V-Wing.
Send the V-Wing,
Steen said abruptly.
Shoot him down.
Maybe, Moores was thinking. But I'm thinking not. We need to get to the Emperor.
If Belcore is working with a group on the ground who are trailing the Emperor and Vader and we shoot down Belcore, the group on the ground may still get to him.
He's just an elderly man, Steen. They can't be moving very fast.
Right. I see your point.
Moores raised the wing leader, trying out another idea.
Minsa, will your men take your orders even over Belcore's?
Ma'am, we all owe the Colonel in one way or another, but yes, they'll obey whatever I tell them.
Good, then listen to me. You're going to keep doing as he's ordered, but we're going to stay with you, and you're going to keep us apprised of what's happening as it's happening. And then, when he calls in the attack, you're going to give me the coordinates and delay your arrival.
Delay, ma'am?
I need to get there first, get the stormtroopers on the ground. Then you fly in. Tell your men whatever you have to. Tell them to take a recon pass at first. They'll see the stormtroopers, they'll see Lord Vader, and then you tell them that it's Belcor who's the traitor. Can you do all that?
Easily, ma'am.
A mist started to rise from the warm, wet ground. Crouched low, Cham looked down at the village nestled in the quarry below. The scene struck him as surreal. Vader and the Emperor and a helmetless royal guard sat near a fire amid a circle of Twi'leks, passing around fruits and drinking gourds. Vader was working on something he held in his hands. Music carried up from the bottom of the quarry, a lilting melody played by woodwinds and drums.
You won't believe this,
he said, and handed the macro binoculars to Isval, who came away with the same baffled expression that Cham knew he must have worn. Gaul took the macro binoculars from Isval, surveyed the scene, grunted, and handed them back to Cham.
Even with sniper rifles, that would be a difficult shot, Gaul said. And we don't have sniper rifles.
What do we do?
Isval asked Cham. Cham looked at Gaul, then nodded at the torchlit path that led down one side of the quarry.
Can your troops get down the side without alerting anyone?
Those paths are half cut into the quarry wall, Gaul replied, eyeing the path.
Between that and this mist, I think we could get down the path unseen, yes, assuming no one comes along for a nighttime stroll. But unless the mist thickens, as soon as my people hit the bottom of that quarry and start heading for the village, they'll be there for all to see.
Right, Cham agreed. One thing at a time, though. One thing at a time.
What are you thinking?
Isval asked. Cham could hear the edge in her voice, her need to do something now that they had Vader and the Emperor in their sights.
I'm thinking we get Gaul's people in position, and then we wait, he said.
She bit down hard, as if trying to wall off words she knew she shouldn't say. Finally she burst out,
Wait for what? They're right there!
And so are 36 innocent people,
Cham snapped.
Our people, backward or not. I send Gaul's team, what do you think happens? I call for Belcor's V-wings to hit these coordinates, and what happens?
Isval just stared at him, her fists clenching and unclenching.
It's late,
Cham said soothingly. The villagers will return to their home soon. We watch where Vader and the Emperor go. Everyone has to sleep, even them.
Then we move in, quick, precise. No one gets hurt but them.
Then this is over. Gaul looked from Cham to Isval, back to Cham. Isval finally gave a nod.
If this mist gets too thick, we won't be able to see the bottom of the quarry from here.
One thing at a time, Cham repeated.
I'll have my troops start moving down,
Gaul said. His words were half question, half statement. And Cham nodded. After he'd gone, Isval held out her hand for the macro binoculars.
I'll watch.
Figured, Cham said. I need to talk to Callan anyway.
About what? She asked.
About exits, Cham said.
He watched for a moment as Gaul's fighters crouched low and started crawling single file down the cutout path that led down to the bottom of the quarry. Then he moved off into the trees and raised Callan on the comm.
Cham,
Callan acknowledged. Don't argue with what I'm about to say. Understand?
Yes, all right.
Chem exhaled, then said it.
I need you to leave now, fly back, and start an organized retreat of our forces into the mountains. See to the dispersal of the people and material we have.